brought to you by P4P Muscle Productions and Entertainment, the number one drug-free athlete sponsorship foundation in the world. Now, I want you to grab a friend, turn the volume up a bit, lean in, and listen to the show where all the athletes want to talk. Fit Talk with Melinda Corsino.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Fit Talk with Melinda Corsino. This show is brought to you by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you're a drug-free athlete or just looking for the best supplements on the planet that represents the drug-free lifestyle, check out P4P Muscle at p4pmuscle.com. You can also use my promo code Melinda, M-E-L-I-N-D-A, for 15% off any supplements on the website. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. We have an awesome show lined up for you. Today I am going to be talking with both Michael Wilkie and John Yoakes, who are two very well-known trainers and prep coaches in the natural bodybuilding industry. So I'm going to kick it off with them. I'm going to have John Yoakes introduce himself for anyone listening in that may not know who he is. So John, why don't you take it away and give everyone a quick introduction.
No, thank you, Melinda. I've been in a trainer for 25 years. I own a personal training studio in Connecticut called Lean Physique. I am also the head coach and owner of Team Lean, the natural bodybuilding competition team. We compete all over the country. Like I said, I've been a trainer and a coach for 25 years, seen a lot of changes in the industry. My formal education is sports medicine. I was a former competitor back in the 90s, and I've also been a bodybuilding judge with multiple organizations for the last 20 years.
Awesome. Thank you, John. And now, Michael, quick introduction about yourself as well.
My name is Michael Wilkie. I live in Nashua, New Hampshire. I've been a personal trainer and own my own business for 16 years. I'm a Team K competition prep coach. I've been working with clients, again, for 16 years. And again, as John, see many changes in the industry. And definitely looking forward to tonight's conversation, see if we can set the record straight. And thank you, Melinda, for having us on tonight.
Thank you, guys. I'm very excited for this show. Definitely, it's my second show. Wanted to take it up a notch, do something a little bit different, get some professionals on here, well-known trainers again. I've worked with Michael. Michael is actually my prep coach. I get a lot of questions. Who's your prep coach? Who do you go to? Michael Wilkie is mine. I've known John, been introduced to John since my first bodybuilding show back in 2013. He was actually one of the judges at that show. So I've seen him around at shows, and I like his stuff, and I love talking to his clients. I'm very excited to have both of them on tonight. I want to start off. There's a lot of questions that I get, especially newcomers coming into bodybuilding for the first time, not knowing what to look for in a bodybuilding prep coach and or trainer, or both together, whatever you're looking for. So I want to start off talking about that. So either one of you, take it away. What should people look for coming into bodybuilding for the first time?
I guess I'll start off with this one. A couple of things you want to look for in a prep coach are just make sure they have at least proper certifications, personal training certifications, nutrition certifications. It's also a good idea to make sure that they have liability insurance. Any legitimate trainer slash coach will have the proper certifications and proper insurance to cover them. You got to be aware of people that don't have those things or they're not willing to show them to you. It also helps if somebody has been in the industry for a while, especially as a competitor, but also in other capacities, because they'll have a better idea of what goes on. And somebody that's involved maybe in different organizations, because competing in different organizations can be different. Also, somebody that will answer questions. If you contact a coach and they're unwilling to spend time either talking to you or messaging with you on Facebook or emailing with you to answer any questions you may have, that's probably somebody that you want to stay away from. Any prep coach would be glad to take some of their time and answer questions that people may have. Michael, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. My biggest thing, I always love when I have new clients coming in and they say, you know, I was working down at the gym and the guy down there, he had big pecs and he was telling me I should be doing this, that, and the other thing, or you know, maybe they tried this internet diet or that internet diet, and so they start following them. This is one area when you're talking about competition prep. It's very specific. You know, it's very detailed. There's a lot that goes into it. You can't out-train a bad diet, bottom line. So if there might be somebody in the gym who, you know, can lift 1,000,000 pounds and maybe has his biceps as big as his head, but it doesn't mean he or she knows what they're doing as far as actually getting ready and all the subtle nuances that go into competition prep. So, you know, be mindful about, you know, somebody who's, you know, maybe competed 20 years ago or, you know, they've never competed, but they have a good physique. The thing that gets me the most is when people get online and they do all these one-size-fits-all approach. I was actually on today looking for something else, and you can just go to a specific site and actually download the diet that certain champion competitors have used. And we're talking about like legitimate competitors now, you know, in the various organizations that, you know, are making their diets available just to anybody. And to me, that's just insane. I can't understand that. So definitely do your homework on your coach. Definitely make sure they have the credentials. And it's definitely a good idea to make sure that they've been on stage themselves more than once. And so that's my advice there.
I'd have to agree with you, Mike.
I think that people are often shocked, and maybe people go to the internet to start off because it's a cheap way to do so. I think people are often shocked at the price of a quality trainer. In my opinion, you're getting what you pay for, and it's not an area that you want to save money on. So I'm sure you guys would agree. It's definitely not an area to cut costs and download a one-size-fits-all diet. It's something that you need to be personalized, and a quality trainer is going to really make or break the difference when you get on stage.
Well, that's what doing your homework is all about.
I couldn't agree more with that. All of the clients that I work with, especially from Contest Prep, I change their programs, a lot of them, every week because the body will adapt to things very quickly. And obviously some people are going to respond faster than others. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But a good coach will do that. That's why I have a problem with coaches that give the same diet to, you know, 35 different people. I mean, how are you supposed to know that all those people are going to respond to the same diet? And maybe, you know, that coach might be, you know, a quote-unquote pro competitor, and so people automatically think that that makes them an expert. And a lot of times I've found that just because somebody is a pro athlete, that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be a good coach, because you have to be good at a lot of different things to be a good coach, aside from having a good knowledge of nutrition and training. There's a lot of other things that go into it, and I'm sure Michael would agree with me and can probably add to that.
No, absolutely. It definitely goes back to doing your homework when you're looking to get into the sport. I've been involved in many sports in my lifetime, and this is definitely, without a doubt, the most demanding in terms of just pure discipline on your part as a competitor. But you know, depending on how far you want to take it, also to your pocketbook. But there are ways, again, if you do your homework, that you can be smart about it. The one thing when working with my clients is I'll never adjust my price for my services, because I have confidence in my services. I know there's value there, but I never want that to be a reason why somebody doesn't hire me. So, you know, I'm looking to see if we can work something out so that at least we can get somebody forward, and I get somebody moving forward, and I know that they're going to get the proper education, the proper guidance, that support that's so necessary to be successful on stage. So really, the moral of the story here is, you know, this is an area you can't skimp on. You really got to be willing to put a little skin in the game. And again, by doing your homework and making sure you're working with a coach who has that experience that we already talked about, it is invaluable. And it, you know, if you talk to a coach and everything seems great, you know, the conversation, there's chemistry there, so on and so forth, but they give you the same exact diet, the same exact program as they're giving your fellow competitors or your friends that are coming with you, you need to run. I mean, get your money back, get out, and don't look back. I probably cannot stress any other point more than that one. The one-size-fits-all approach, you go online, you get these diets, you're not going to have long-term success, bottom line.
If I could just add to that, Melinda and Michael, I think that people seem to forget that doing something like this can affect your health, not just physically, but mentally. So you want to make sure that you get somebody that's not only going to be there during the process, but after the process. I've seen a lot of, I hate to use the word train wrecks, but I've seen a lot of train wrecks in this industry with people who have had coaches and then the coach is nowhere to be found once the show is over. And, you know, everybody likes to talk about reverse diets, and reverse dieting is probably actually harder for most people than the contest prep. And I'm sure that, you know, Melinda, you're a competitor. I'm sure that you can attest to that. The first time you did a reverse diet was probably harder than doing the prep, because there's really no, you know, there's no carrot, so to speak, at the end. You're trying to build yourself, your metabolism back up and all that. So I just want people to be aware that you're hiring somebody that's going to be dealing with your health. So you need to make sure that this person is knowledgeable and that they're really going to care.
Absolutely. And if I can piggyback on that too with Melinda, I mean, as you already mentioned, I'm your coach. And one of the things that I make sure I do with every single one of my clients, and I'm sure John is the same way, is that when I tell, or I tell you to do something or guide you on something, I'm not just going to say, Melinda or John, do this, 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 and this. I'm going to do that, but I'm going to then tell you why. I'm going to follow up. This is why I have you doing this. This is what you can expect based on these adjustments we made. I want to educate you. I don't want to just say, go do this, send you a text and say, bomb, there you go. No. Okay, we're going to do this. This is why we're doing this, and this is what we can expect. If not, we'll make those subtle adjustments, so on and so forth. Again, here's why, so on and so forth. If they're educating you, if they're not giving you that information, to me, that just doesn't jive.
Or if they're not willing to answer questions that you may have about your training program that you're doing, or your diet, or why you're doing one thing versus another. I mean, I'm sure you hear this a lot from people that you work with. Oh, well, my friend's trainer has them doing this, or I talked to a trainer at the gym, and he said I need to be doing this. And me as a coach, that frustrates me because, you know, they don't know. Like, I know when I sit down with somebody in the beginning, I have a long, like, they come in, I meet with them, we do body fat, or if it's an online, they have it done, and like, they send me the information. When I look at those numbers and I see the person, I pretty much know how long it's going to take them to get ready, because we're going to do it in a slow, safe manner. And I already have a plan in my head laid out for how I'm going to get this person from point A to point Z. And if they start to listen to other people and start to take detours, then that interrupts the plan. And in the end, it usually ends up costing the client having a better outcome.
And I just think that's one of the problems we have with social media today. And again, just the, you know, the interaction that we have with other people in the gym and so on and so forth, because, you know, I'll have clients who are actually in different parts of the country and, you know, where I don't see them on a regular basis, obviously, you know, it's only through email, phone, Skype, text, whatever the case might be. And perhaps they've picked up a opposing coach that they're working with. And the opposing coach may have been somebody who's competed in the past, or maybe they're even competing now and they have clients or whatever the case might be. And they say, well, you should have your trainer. It's like, what are you talking about? You don't even know this person's history. You don't know their medical history. You don't know their competition. You don't know where they've been. You don't know what they're doing with their diet, what they've been doing with their diet. You know,
I'm glad you said medical history.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the hardest thing for me to really keep myself in check when I, on the rare occasion, it does happen, but it's rare, that I'll have a client come to me and they start saying this stuff. And it's not even at my client, because I can't blame my client. It's these other trainers who are stepping in and thinking they have the answers. You don't know. There's just so much that we've been working on together that things change, and to just think that you have the answers, you know. And so as a competitor, I just strongly implore you that whoever you hire, whether it's I'm fortunate enough or John is for you to hire us, is trust the process, trust what we're telling you, but make sure we're giving you that information that you need so you understand why we're doing the things that you're doing. And then just do your best to block out the outside noise, because everybody is going to have an opinion, and everybody, I have air quotes up right now, is an expert.
It is
you
very
took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming from someone on the competition side as of right now, I know when I enter prep, and my first preps were, I'm sure Michael can attest to that, a little bit easier than they are now as far as my mentality. I think because I'm so far in now, I didn't know what to expect when I first started. I can be a little bit of a head case in my own mind because I'm very,
I am very into this.
And I absolutely can drive people crazy around me when I'm doing this. And I have, you know, Michael is always there to answer my questions, to calm me down when I feel like I'm going to jump off a bridge because things aren't going exactly how I think they should be going. And he is always explaining everything. And I'm sure, you know, I've heard nothing but positive things from John's clients as well. So, and again, trusting the process. And it's tough because there's Instagram, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, and we're bombarded depending on how many bodybuilding or, you know, social media sites you follow. I know I follow a lot. It's tough because we see these people. We have to keep in mind that there is, you know, natural bodybuilding and then there's non-drug tested bodybuilding, and both are cool and both is fine. And I really, whatever someone's into, I think that that's great. But you have to keep in mind if you're going about it the natural way, you may not look as lean. You're not taking anything. And I know that I have to get that through to my head as well, because I look up to a lot of IFBB pros, figure pros, bikini pros. And I have to keep it in my head that I'm not going to look like that as my end result, and that's okay. But it's tough out there with being bombarded by the internet 24/7.
I'm glad you brought that up, because somebody as high caliber as you to say that you even have get emotional with yourself and start to doubt things, that's important, because I tell everybody that's part of the process. That's going to happen to you, especially the first time you compete. And people just need to realize that that's when it's also important to have a good coach that you can lean on. And in the case with myself, we have a team, so we have a very active community with our team. And we, as teammates, everybody leans on each other when they're having a tough time. But having a coach that will take the time to talk to you and listen to you, that's super important, because as we all know, this could be just as much of a mental game as it can be a physical game.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is 90%, as far as I'm concerned, is that this process is 90% mental.
Absolutely.
You know, and kind of piggybacking on something that Melinda said, I think one of the worst, at least for a first time competitor, at least somebody who's, you know, only into it for a couple of seasons, I think one of the more challenging things that you can do for yourself is start getting online and looking at some of these pictures when they're not in line with who you might be competing against. So if you're going to compete in a drug tested competition, in my mind, it makes no sense for you to get online and looking at websites of non drug tested, you know, competitors.
Exactly.
Because what you're trying to do is live a fantasy. It's just something that's never going to happen for you unless you decide you want to take a different avenue toward that. So comparing yourself to these people, of course you're going to come up short. You know, you want to get online, look at the websites, look at the pictures of competitors who are competing in the same competition you are. And you're going to save yourself a lot of stress doing that.
Plus,
I don't
people
think I've
usually
completely learned that yet.
People usually only post pictures of themselves when they're in great shape as well. A lot of people don't post what they look like in the off season. And I try to tell people that, you know, you can look at all the pictures you want on Facebook and Instagram and social media and YouTube, but you got to realize that most of the time these people are posting pictures of them when they are in their absolute best shape. And the way you look on stage the day of the show, you look that way for that day. If you're lucky, the whole day, because, you know, your body can change depending on, you know, what types of food you're and how much water and salt you're consuming during the day. And plus, everybody knows when you're tan and you've got a sheen on and you're under the lights, you're going to look 100 times better than you do, you know, just in regular lighting. So for people to compare themselves to someone else's stage photos, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're just going to cause yourself to have more mind games.
Definitely. So I'm going to switch up the conversation a little bit, because, again, questions I get from people, and I'm not a trainer, so it's good to turn it over to you guys. Everyone has questions about macros. Carbs, fat, protein, and there's a lot of different trends going around out there with how people are working on their macros. Now, I know both of you guys don't do a one-size-fits-all diet, which I think is fantastic, but I'm just going to kind of bring up some different thoughts. And this is a new trend, and I've had a lot of bikini girls that are doing it. cutting out all your fats during portions of your prep. What are your thoughts on that?
Michael, you want to
I personally think that's silly. I think that, you know, John alluded to earlier, you know, this has to be, you know, you have to approach this as healthily as you can. And if you start cutting out any one of the macronutrients completely, even for a short stretch, I personally think that that's a fool's errand. You know, you want to try to find balance, but there definitely has to be, you know, adjustments made, whether it's to your protein, whether it's to your carbs, whether it's, you know, to your fat at different aspects. But to go just completely cutting everything out, you definitely run the risk of having issues later on, especially as you get toward peak week. You know, with my organization, the Diet Doc and the Team K Perfect Peaking Competition Prep, my objective in working with any one of my competitors, and this is a relative statement because, again, we're all different, is I want my competitors eating the most amount of food possible, doing the least amount of cardio possible, and still losing body fat, you know, on a regular basis. Now, again, that's relative. When I say the least amount of cardio, I'm not saying none, because I definitely have clients who have to do 5 days a week of cardio or 6 days or whatever the case might be because they're 30 pounds overweight, you know. But then I also have some competitors. I had a guy last year getting ready for – he was doing a day a week. And even then I started pulling back because he was just mm-hmm. he was just leaning out and getting, you know, and not getting to a point where we wanted him. So, again, definitely you have to tweak your macronutrients as you go along, but it's got to be based on how your body is responding. You don't just do it because you do it. My favorite thing, when I was coming up, I grew up in the 90s, and it was a situation where 3 months to get ready for a competition. That's insane. you want to take as much time as you possibly can
right.
so you don't have to suffer. If you have to go on a ketogenic diet because you gave yourself 10 weeks to get ready for a competition, you're going to hate life. Life is going to be miserable, and it just really isn't worth it. You know, you start doing a no-carb diet or very minimal carbohydrates, You're definitely running the risk of metabolic suppression. Your metabolism gets to a point where it's just not going to be involved in the game anymore, and you're going to find it real difficult to get to, again, like I said, where you want to be come contest day.
I think for me, especially dealing with females, I think cutting out fat is probably the worst thing you could do, only because people forget that fat is involved in hormone production. And, you know, I've seen a lot of females when they cut their fats out, they'll start to have hair falling out. Their skin will start to not look as good as it did before. And kind of going off of what Michael just said, I try to keep my clients eating the most amount of food and doing the least amount of cardio. And the first adjustments I will always make to someone's program is to the exercise. If I can leave the diet alone but adjust their training and their cardio to get their body to keep responding, I'd rather do that than take food away. The second thing I would do is I would change their macronutrients up, like maybe redistribute, add some carbs, drop some protein, or vice versa, or add some fat, drop some protein. But try something different rather than dropping the calories. Dropping calories for me is always the last resort. I mean, obviously – at some point, it's going to be necessary to do that, but I try to go as long as possible before I can do that. And again, that goes back to hiring somebody who's not a quote-unquote cookie-cutter coach and someone who's going to be customizing your program. If you're on a program where you're just getting a printout every week that 40 other people are getting, then, you know, you're going to get to a point where basically you're just going to be doing hours and hours of cardio and not eating anything. And that's not really what you want to do. Especially if you're a first-time competitor. If you're a first-time competitor, you want to have a good experience. So if this is something you want to keep doing, if you hire the right coach in the beginning, then it'll make it much more enjoyable, and you'll get a lot more out of it personally than if you just go about it the wrong way. If you go about anything the right way, you'll enjoy it more, but especially something like
that. I can attest to that. I hired Michael right from the beginning, and I've been with him since 2013, so I stayed with the same coach, and I've had a great experience, and I think that's made all the difference in my outlook on things now, as much as I can still get emotional, be a head case, and that's just because I'm tough on myself, and I expect a lot out of
myself.
That's
why you're a champion athlete in more than one discipline.
Well, and the thing of it too with that is it goes back to, you know, when you are looking, it goes back to the original question, what you should be looking for in a coach. You got to realize, you know, that the challenges that competitors face are real. You know, as long as I've been in the game and John even longer with just that tremendous amount of experience, to us it's obvious. You know, yeah, patience. You know, going through the process. You know, so on. But competitors out there, they don't understand that. And why should they? They might be first-time competitors. So what I do, I pride myself in this, is I adjust myself and how I interact with my clients. I mean, I know Melinda, she was having a tough day the other day, and you'll remember the joke that I gave her. She was talking about, you know, not jumping off a bridge or anything like that. And I said, well, to be safe, why don't we at least put a bungee cord on your ankle? You know, just bring it down a little bit, you know, relax, just calm down, you know, and just like I said. But if you just constantly, if you're a competitor and you're just constantly worried and you're again not getting that feedback and the education of why things might be happening and what we can do to adjust. Like I said, you're gonna be miserable. You're not gonna enjoy it. I've seen this for other competitors come to me from other places, and I've seen this one that really entertained me was a competitor who came to me with a mapped out diet for the next 6 weeks. Each week it changed, and the actual menu was written. You're gonna have steak this day. You're gonna have this that.
I just ran across
and I'm like,
that too.
Have you actually counted this up? Like, do you actually know how much you're taking in? And I don't count calories. I count macronutrients. Simple arithmetic will give us the calories. But I'm looking at it as like the fact that – and how does this competitor know she should be changing to this type of food at this point, or she should be adjusting to this amount, you know, 4 weeks from today? What if her body is responding better or slower? Again, people, I strongly encourage you – stay away from that. You know, again, if you are not treated like an individual, you know, and you're not getting a customized program, again, you're going to find it extremely difficult to be successful.
Well, I've said from the beginning, since I started doing this 25 years ago, that it's called personal training for a reason. It's personal. And if you're not getting a personalized program, then what are you paying for? You know, think about that. And just because you can go on, you know, some of these websites and print off, you know, quote unquote free diets, that doesn't mean they're going to work for you or they're even going to be healthy. So keep in mind, your health is very important, and it's not just your physical health, it's your mental health. And I try to drive that point home to people that this is, you know, very few people are going to make a living as competitors. And you just have to be realistic about that. And, you know, after the lights fade and the show is over, what are you going to do then? So you don't want to do any damage to yourself to get on stage just to be a mess afterwards, maybe for the rest of your life. So people really need to take that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Melinda, if I could touch on one thing with that is what competitors need to realize when you're dieting for competition and, you know, you're getting deep into contest prep. You might be, you know, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever. You're not going to be squatting the same weight you were squatting, you know, in the off season. It's just not going to happen.
Nope.
You're going to be tired. You're going to be fatigued. Now, I say to my clients, if you're just absolutely dragging your knuckles all day, yeah, let's adjust that. I don't want it to be where it's adversely impacting the rest of your life. But you cannot expect to be lifting the same weights, you know, 6 weeks out from a competition that you were 16 weeks. It's just not going to happen, okay? You might get some of those genetic freaks out there. Exactly. And the other thing, too, is I have some folks that came to me recently, and one of the competitors was talking about how flat he was looking. I said, it doesn't matter how flat you look today. You were consuming 600 grams of carb a day. You know, of course you're going to be full and bloated and all these kind of things. The point is we got to get this body fat off of you come competition day. If you look flat, then we have a problem. But there's
right. It only matters
how
you work on
diet.
Stage.
Exactly. We're going to do things to your diet throughout the process. Exactly. So when you're on stage, you're at your fullest, your hardest, you're crisp, you're as crisp as possible, you know, so on and so forth. So, yeah, don't worry about those types of things during the actual contest prep phase of things.
Right.
So what you're saying is that I should not go try to one rep max my squat tomorrow is what you're saying.
I'm just saying.
I'm just kidding.
But if there would be
anyone,
it would be you, Melinda, who could do it.
It would be me.
That's part of my issue.
Melinda,
if you do that, we might need to get Mike a bungee cord.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, she is going to do it. I watch. No, I won't do it.
I promise I won't do it. I love heavy lifting, but I'm starting to trend down. I understand, but it's still tough for me. It's a mental thing, and I'm sure it's a mental thing for a lot of people that it just really love lifting heavy all the time to see those numbers come down. It's definitely tough for me. I was at the gym the other day, and we were working on a 2 rep max for a strict press, and my numbers were awful, and I was like just reminding myself over and over and over again, my diet is different right now than the last time I did this. This is okay. This is not a problem. Just get the workout in and get out of the gym and stop thinking about it. But to kind of piggyback off what you guys were talking about, do you have any getting a lot of new clients in and these misconceptions that people may have when they've not competed before? Do you have any just funny things or interesting things that people have come to you with misconceptions, whether they think we starve ourselves, are they surprised at the amount of carbs you have, you know, your competitors consuming, just anything funny or interesting you think the audience would like to know?
I have a couple. I'll start with one. Is I have a competitor of mine, and she starts rolling her eyes at me because I remind her that she said this all the time. She's actually a medical doctor down in Boston, and she competed for the first time this past spring, and she did very well for her first competition. And it was funny as we were getting closer to the competition, I was actually increasing her carb intake, and she was struggling with that. She's like, "I'm going to get fat. I'm going to gain weight." And I said, "Okay, let's watch. Let's just see. Let's just see what happens in the weekend adjustment." And I know what's going to happen. You know, so what happened was is we do it. She turns out great. I had her carbohydrates. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would say we were close to double than what she started with, you know, going into the week. We're sitting in the competitors meeting, and she looks at me, and we're having a conversation about it. And she says, looking at her, so I can't believe how I look. I feel so blah, 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 all this shit. And she says, "Michael, I got to be honest with you. What we've done, you know, in terms of my carb increase and so on and so forth, and not depleting my carbs during the last week or my water, you know, during the last week, the peak week as we call it, it goes against all of my medical training." And right there, I just did a total fist pump. Yeah, buddy. That's what I'm talking about, is we get these ideas and we think that we should be doing these things because, you know, it's in social media. Somebody said it during the debate last night. Just because he said it doesn't make it right. Doesn't mean it's right.
Right.
You know, or doesn't mean it's true, you know. So, yeah, I love that story.
I think I just get a lot of people, and I have for years and years, that they think that when you're prepping that you're not eating anything and you're doing hours and hours of cardio a day. So when I have people, like Michael said, I have people that do very little cardio, and I have people that have to do more cardio. I have people that have to eat low carb, people that eat high carb. I've even had to do keto diets for short periods of time with people just to kind of confuse their bodies. Now, that's not my favorite way to do things, but it's my job as a coach to try to figure out the best, most efficient way to get that client in shape. And I think people, just by reading online, they just think that you're starving the whole time, you're stark raving mad the whole time, and you're spending hours and hours doing cardio. And when I actually stress the strength training more, and, you know, keeping the food high and keeping the cardio as low as possible, that mystifies people, and it takes them a while to get that. And I had a similar experience with a few people last year who were established pros who came and hired me to prep them for their shows last year. And I worked with them for like a year leading up to it. And all of them, I went through the same thing that Michael did with his client, where we were dropping cardio down like literally to nothing, you know, towards the end, like the last 4 to 6 weeks, and increasing their food. And they kept losing body fat. I had a client from Canada, like I had to like constantly do these giant refeeds with her because she kept losing body fat with doing no cardio and eating tons of food. And she's, you know, all 90 pounds of her, and she was eating, you know, 2,200 calories a day, and she's still losing body fat. So you can't really, and, you know, everybody's different. So you can't go off of, you know,
like we talked about earlier, you can't, oh, well, my friend's a trainer, or my boyfriend's trainer said this, or the trainer at the gym said this. You know, you just got to kind of believe in the person that you're working with and put your trust in them. And like Michael said, in the end, they might learn something, like his physician client learned about doing everything that flies in the face of what she knows. But so she learned something from that. So that's a successful prep for the coach and the client.
And one of you mentioned water depletion during peak week. What are your beliefs on, because I know I have actually a very good friend who completely, she was taking in so little water during her peak week. And I'm not talking the day of the show sipping on water. I'm talking the entire week that she had to take multiple days off work because she couldn't function, and she had to just stay in bed and nap because she just wasn't, things just weren't, because she was dehydrated, her macros were super low. There are people out there that do this. What are your thoughts on depleting water in peak week?
Well, I'm all for water. I'm all for depleting your water if that's what the crap that you want to go through. I'm all for cutting your water there during the week if you want to look like a deflated, soggy balloon on stage. God bless. Go ahead. But, you know, you got to remember that the body and the muscle is 70% water, just like the earth. It's important that you keep it that way. And again, digressing a little bit, but it does tie in with the whole peak week and the water thing, is we, in my organization, the Diet Doc and Team K, we want peak week to really be as uneventful as possible, you know, as it relates to your diet. We're definitely doing some things. We're definitely, you know, changing some things. But the objective should always be, when you go into that last week, your water stays the same when you're working with me. Because, again, we want to keep those muscles full. When you start tweaking with your carbs, your sodium and all that with the combination of those things and other variables, aspects, the water is actually going to be pulled out from underneath your skin and into the muscle tissue, giving you that nice, full, hard, tight look. If you don't have water there, again, you're going to find that the muscles are going to not be as full and as hard as they can be. So, and beside the health factor, the health component. So it's vitally important that you do know how much water you're taking in, and there's really not a whole heck of a lot of adjustment as you approach the competition day.
Well, people also need to remember that when you cut your water intake, especially drastically, within 12 hours, your body will release a stress hormone called aldosterone, and that signals your kidneys to recycle water back into your body, and that water is not necessarily going to go where you want it to.
Yeah, it's going to give you that soft, filmy look.
Yeah, and not to mention it can damage your kidneys as well. But, yeah. I mean, I generally have my people drink more water towards the end of the week, and even on contest day. I mean, I had clients competing last weekend in New Jersey, and some of my male bodybuilders were drinking 2.5 gallons of water that day during the show, and people were looking at them like they were crazy. You know, and one of them ended up winning the overall, and the other one ended up coming in third in both of his classes. And I have all my clients drink. And you know, I'm sure Michael's heard this, and Melinda, you probably heard this backstage, people complaining because, oh, I haven't had any water since, you know, Thursday night, and it's late Saturday. I mean, that's just not healthy. I mean,
not at all.
And I hate to bring this up, but I think the whole thing with cutting out water and doing all that, I think that comes from the non-tested side.
I was just going to say that. You're absolutely
because
correct.
You can get away with that if you're using certain substances that will override the homeostatic effect that your body wants to stay in. But when you're natural, you have to pay more attention to how body chemistry actually works, and you have to maximize your own body's chemistry to work in your favor. So I think people, you know, they have a little misconception, and that comes down to the difference between natural bodybuilding and non-tested bodybuilding. People, when people hear the word bodybuilding, they automatically think of the guys that you see in the magazines and the guys that are competing, like in that show this weekend in Vegas. And people don't realize that there's a side of bodybuilding where there's people that compete that, you know, that's in most natural bodybuilders. Anybody could attain that physique in it, you know, given the proper time and work ethic. You know, you can get to that level. Can you get to the level of some of these other people that are competing in non-tested shows? Probably not, unless you're willing to step onto the other side and take substances that are going to override your body's own natural want to stay in homeostasis. So I think people need to remember that, when you start, a lot of coaches now will say, the more things you messed with the last week, like if you look great on Monday, why do you want to do all this stuff? I mean, why do you want to start? Because your body's already been under a lot of stress for a long period of time during your prep, not just mental, physical stress, but mental stress. So the more things you change, the more things can go wrong. So you want to try to keep things as steady as possible because our bodies like to be in that balance.
Yeah, another misconception that I think that is out there is, it was alluded to earlier. If you think that you're going to be in the same shape and you're going to look the same, a month after your competition, you're in for a rude awakening because you're going to find it. You're hard pressed to do that. At no point is your body really more primed for growth. And that doesn't mean building bigger muscles or what, but just progress than directly
right
after a competition, because your metabolism is going to be slow. And this is what people don't realize too. When you diet for a competition, especially if you're dieting very hard and you're dieting for extended periods of time, your metabolic rate actually slows down. This
absolutely
is why we like to, as we get to the competition day, we want to, it's what we call eating into the competition. So you actually
mm-hmm
eat more as you get closer. And then what happens is if you try to stay competition, ready all the time, summer's coming up, I got some barbecue, I'm going on a cruise.
Not healthy.
And again, you're going to find that the progress that you're trying to see for your next competition is going to be much harder to attain because you didn't allow your body to work through the various phases of dieting. And
I was just going to say that.
Yeah,
in
New England.
Time between contests.
Yeah, exactly. In New England, where we get a ton of snow, you're not like Michigan or anything, but still, we definitely cover up around here.
Right.
It's okay to put on a couple pounds.
Right.
Actually ideal to do that because, again,
absolutely,
what you're doing is you're allowing for growth, you're allowing for progress, and you're really just recalibrating your metabolic rate. And you're going to find that if you do it intelligently, and I actually
right
find that for myself personally, I'm focused more on this with my competitors as of late, probably the last year and a half, than the actual competition prep. Again, no attention is taken from the competition prep, but how do we get competitors to make that transition from contest
right
day into the off season and still stay, even if they never compete again, but they can still stay within
yeah
5 to 10 pounds of
to
their
find
competition
some balance,
weight.
Finding balance.
Exactly.
I think
and
important
again, if you're competing all the time, I actually heard this at one of the competitions last year. It was one of the fall shows. And it was a female competitor, and she looked phenomenal, no question. But she, the MC announced her coming out that this was something like her 17th or 18th competition that year. No, I'm
yikes
not lying. 17th or 18th
wow
competition that year, and she had 5 or 6 more to go. I don't remember what the statistics were. And I'm thinking, it's October. The season runs
right
from March to November. So she was obviously traveling around the country to do this.
Right.
But I always want to think long term, whether you're competing again
right
or whether you're never going to compete again, is how do we keep your metabolic rate working for you opposed to against you? Because,
yeah,
again, you save yourself a lot of stress.
And like Michael said earlier about giving your metabolism time to recover, that just comes right down to letting your anabolic and metabolic hormones come back up to normal. And that takes time because even if you've dieted slow, your thyroid levels are going to drop, your testosterone, your estrogen, things like that are going to drop. And it takes time for those to come back up. And that's another reason why reverse dieting is so important, because if you go from eating 1,400 calories a day and doing a half hour HIIT cardio 5 days a week, and a week after the show, you're not doing any cardio and you're eating 2,000 calories a day, you're going to put body fat on because there's going to be that lagging period where your metabolism is going to be slower because the hormone levels are lower. And that's the case even if you've dieted, correctly for a long period of time, it's still going to happen. So, you want to do a good amount of time of reversing to give your body the time to recover. Otherwise, you're going to put on body fat. And then a lot of times what happens is people – they eat too much for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden they lift up their shirt and their abs are gone, and they freak out and they go right back into contest mode. And that's only going to make things worse.
So you just need to be patient with the process and let your body, give your body time to recover, and then you won't have to be bouncing around like that.
And sometimes it goes the other direction where instead of popping back into contest mode, they just continue to go off the bandwagon.
Yep.
And then it's just, it's a bit, it's like, in, it's tough mentally because it's like, I already did this on 2 weeks. I ate like crap. There's no going back. And then it's just, you know, it's crazy for the next few months. And then it, I'm speaking from a female point of view because I'm not, I can't speak from a male bodybuilding point of view, but that girls putting on pounds in the off season that are, you know, 5'2", 5'3", and then having to do all that work to then take that back off, you know, the,
and it's going to be, male, it's gonna to be male harder the second
body.
Time.
Yeah, exactly. To the and male bodybuilder point of things. Time. Yeah, to the male bodybuilder point of things, you know, when you do that, and I have no problem admitting back in the day when I was 18 years old and just starting off, I did that. You know, I can't tell you how many competitions I did that. I think my record was putting on something like 25 pounds and like 10 or 15 days after a competition, because if it wasn't nailed, if it wasn't nailed down, I ate it, you know. But here's the thing,
right.
until I learned, you know, through self-education, through working with some fantastic people in my organization and just working with my clients, you know, over the years, is that what's going to happen is, as a male bodybuilder, and this is the same for females, but I know the male bodybuilders are more into it, is, oh, I'm going to pack on a ton of muscle and so on and so forth. Mm. When you're eating a criminal amount of calories, just an obscene amount, just to put on all the size. Oh, I'm big. I'm huge. I'm, you know, I'm 200 pounds when I competed at 150, you know, pounds, and all this. All you are is fat.
Right.
You're going to put on muscle. You absolutely are, because again, now you can lift a Buick because you have all the carbs and you have all that fat in you. You know, you're gonna, you know, and that obviously when you lift, you know, heavier, you're going to be able to put on muscle tissue. But what happens is because you have to diet down so
much, you're
going to
diet it all off.
You're just going to go back to where you were. You're going to look the exact same as you were the competition
before. You may end up smaller.
Exactly.
You may end up smaller because you might have to work harder.
And it will be harder, as you just said. Exactly. And it just boggles my mind that I still see this and I hear this from people when they come to me. But, you know, I did this and so on. I didn't diet out of the competition properly. And I, you know, I took some time off because whatever the reason might be. And they put on all this weight. And then, they find that in their next competition, they look the exact same, like I said, or if not worse, because, again, they just didn't know how to take care of business after the competition.
I agree.
Think that's, yeah, absolutely. I actually had some girls on my last show a couple weeks ago that were talking about the mentality of that and how you're used to looking in the mirror, seeing your body
absolutely.
A certain way. And I say females because I feel like for a lot of times there's this stigma attached to female physiques and how we should look in social media and this and that. And I know it's out there for men as well, so I'm not downplaying the fact that that happens, but especially from the female side, this certain look that they should obtain. And it's tough when you're looking at yourself in the mirror and then you put on those few pounds. I usually try to keep myself within 10 pounds, but it's still, I'm only 5'1". So that seems like a lot to me. And it's tough to go from seeing your body in stage shape to then you just don't feel the same. So it's very mental, and it's definitely important to have a coach that can put it in perspective for you. So that, again, like Michael said earlier, you don't go want to jump off a bridge because you put some weight on and your jeans aren't fitting the same as they did when you're in competition prep. So.
Yeah, and it goes back to the association that you give to the number that you see on the scale. You know, I mean, for somebody
right.
like you, you know, where your weight is up from your last competitions, we needed it to be because of the transition you made into the figure competition as a professional. Now, you have to have muscle. You can't, you know, go on figure, you know, competition stage in the figure round and not have any muscle to you. So any weight that you put on is going to be muscle tissue. So understanding that and realizing that, just because you may have put on 3 pounds or you put on 5 pounds or you even put on 10, but whatever the case might be for you as an individual, it doesn't necessarily mean that you put on fat. This is why studying
it's
your
stage
pictures
weight.
Are so important. Exactly. This is why studying your pictures is so important. If you look at your last, if you look at your photos from your last competition and you look at your photos from this competition and you can say to yourself, wow, yeah, I do look better, and here's where I look better, then you've done everything that you can do. Because what you have to remember, especially as a first-time competitor, we can control the process as much as humanly possible and get you to where you need to be competitive. But what you have to remember is when you finally step on stage, all fact goes out the door, because this is now, it becomes a subjective game. What it is, it's the opinions of 7 to 9 judges telling you that you look better than the competitor standing next to you. You know,
right.
One competitor may like, you know, that you have bigger legs, or that your waist is more, or that your shoulders pop, or whatever the case, and another judge may not. You know, so
I can definitely
speak
to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I don't judge
anymore.
Yeah, that's why I don't judge anymore. I did it years ago, and I refuse to do it. I whatever you get paid, it's not enough. You know, I think it's one of the hardest jobs in sports to do, because it's
absolutely.
Just so difficult when you're trying to make distinctions between competitors. So what you have to remember is, when you step on stage, okay, technically you want to play semantic. Yeah, you're competing against the other competitors, female, male, whatever the case might be. But ultimately you have to remember, you're competing against yourself. Are you better in this competition than you were in your last? That's
pictures
it.
Don't lie.
And as far as your play, exactly. And as far as your placing, you know, I placed second place in quite a few competitions. I placed fourth place in a comment, and I think it actually, in one of my fourth place finishes, I look better than I did in my second place competition, because I don't
know
who's
about the number on the trophy.
Exactly.
It's about the achievement.
Exactly.
In a sport that's subjective, like you said, you can't go by that, because, like, I've seen people win a show and 2 weeks later go into a show that's much bigger and more competitive and not even place.
Exactly. They weren't even looked at.
So you can't judge your success or failure by your placement, because if you do, like I tell people, if you're doing this for a trophy, I'll go down the street and buy you one and save you a lot of time and money, because
that's
not the right reason to do this.
Absolutely.
It's about self-achievement and improvement, and for a lot of people – they start things and don't finish them. So for a lot of the people I've worked with over the years, this is the first thing that they started and actually finished and followed through. And that can have a life-changing effect on people, to actually set a big goal like this. Because remember, this is something that like 1% of the population can do. So just by doing this and completing it, that makes you an elite type person, because you've done something that most people can't even fathom. And that in and of itself is an achievement. You know, take placings or anything else out of it, that's something that you can feel good about and that you can hang your hat on.
I think that's definitely important to remember. And I know it's something that I have to remind myself of all the time, especially going from doing very well at the end of last year to placing 7th in my first pro figure show. And I agree with the placing. I have to say, I'm going from a pro bikini class to a pro figure class, and I need to give myself time for my body to change and to grow, and I just need to be happy with where I am in the process instead of focusing on where I place. And it's something
That's a big jump.
It's a big
moving
jump.
Up divisions,
yep,
like that.
You know, looking back at it, I say, you know, I probably should have given myself more time and just done the show, you know, given myself a good year and a half before I jump back on. But yeah, I learned a lot from being up there. It was a good experience, and it's something that you have to be able to take something away from every show. And
right.
I would
something
say
positive.
At that last show, I took a lot away from being on the pro figure stage for the first time and seeing it was tougher. We were up there for longer. We had a tough class. We were posing. We were holding poses. It was a lot different than competing in the amateur class when I did figure, and I learned a lot from it. And I would say I actually I went out of my way to network and talk with people and make more friends backstage, and that's something that I'm usually very quiet backstage when I go to shows. So I took away a lot of people that I had some great conversations with that I still keep in touch with. So there's a lot of good things that can come out of a show other than just
absolutely.
And it's important, too, when you're competing and, you know, in the different divisions, because I know that was something that you and I focused on quite a bit, Melinda, is that you have to understand the requirements for the division that you're competing in. Is the requirements for figure competition is not the same as it is for bikini. It's not the same as it is even for female bodybuilding. You know, there's Fit Body now that's really taking hold of the bodybuilding scene for women. But if you're competing in the bikini class, you need to understand that to be as muscular or as lean, as ripped, as hard, as shredded, whatever, as a figure or fit body competitor, it's not what you want to do, and it'll actually go against you. You know, you can lose place.
And that changes from organization or federation to federation.
Oh, absolutely.
So you have to know what the standard and what the look is that the federation that you're competing in is looking for, because
I had a client at the show last weekend. She was in great shape, but we knew she was a little bit too hard for what they wanted for bikini, and that's exactly what happened. She placed, but not as high as I felt she should have, but according to the standard of the organization, she placed where she should have. Now, if she was in a different federation, she probably would have placed a lot better. So it just helps to know ahead of time. She was doing this just as a warm-up show and to meet some people on the team, and we knew that going in, and she was all right with that. But especially if it's your first time competing, educate yourself or find a coach that's familiar with the look that each individual organization wants, because it does differ, especially in bikini and figure. It does differ from federation to federation, and I think that's important to keep that in mind.
Yeah. Do you guys, we're heading down to our four-minute mark almost, the show's almost over. Do you guys have any final words, anything, whether it be advice, anything you'd like to say to people listening, people looking for coaches, anything you want people to know just to close out the show?
Well, I would tell people to do your homework, like we talked about in the beginning. Do your homework. Make sure that, you match up even, that you're going to get along with this coach, because you're going to be speaking and emailing and having a lot of interaction with them. So make sure that it's somebody that you like and somebody that you respect. And I also encourage people, like before they hire me, I tell them, contact my clients. Those are my references. So ask the coach or the trainer that you might want to hire if it's all right if they contact your clients, that you're working with now, because those are the people that are going to be able to tell them how that particular coach is to work with. So do your homework. Talk to the clients of the trainer that you want to work with, and don't go based off just the person's, the placings of the people, because it's more than that. While yes, it's important that if their clients are doing well, it's more important how the client feels about that coach. At least for me anyway, that's how I feel about it. And I don't, Michael, you want to finish up?
No, absolutely. I think it's important to set realistic expectations. I think it's important that you be very mindful about not comparing yourselves to other people, especially backstage. I mean, that's one of the things I really zero in on with my clients. If you're backstage and you're starting to look out of the corner of your eye, and I'm watching you, if you're going peripheral on me and you're checking out this girl,
I'm laughing,
this guy over here, and all these kind of things. Yeah, absolutely. You're again, don't do it, because again, you don't know what they're going to look like under the lights. You don't know. And the biggest thing for me, a lot of my success is because I'm not an overly huge guy, especially for my height, but I've been able to do as well as I have because I can pose like a son of a gun. I really take pride in the presentation
posing,
aspect
posing,
of things.
Posing, posing, posing.
Huge, huge.
It's an intangible that you can control.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it really does allow you to display your physique to at its best. And again, so you're looking at this person who in your mind backstage under ridiculous lighting, oh my gosh, look so much, but then they get on the stage and it's laughable because again, they don't even know what the poses are. They don't even know what a quarter turn to the right is or so on.
They spend too much time doing cardio, Mike.
Exactly.
They spent too much time doing cardio. They didn't have any time to practice their poses.
Yeah. So set realistic realistic expectations, excuse me. Do your homework. That's been really the theme of tonight's conversation.
Right.
And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you guys for both being on the show. I really appreciate it. I think this was an awesome talk, very informative, especially for people who are new to bodybuilding and needed some sort of a base to go off of. I am going to go ahead and I'm going to post both Michael Wilkie and John Yoke pages on my fitness page and on my regular Facebook page, depending on where you are, if you follow me. If you do not follow me yet, I'm at facebook.com/mcfit87. That's my fitness page. And again, I will post links to both of their business pages on my site if you're looking to contact them, have any further questions. They're both awesome guys. I'm sure they'll be happy to answer questions that you have, or if you're looking for someone in the upcoming season, I would definitely recommend both of these guys. So again, thank you so much for being on the show. And
thank you very much,
Melinda.
Thank you, Michael.
It
was a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Melinda. Appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, everyone have a good night, and to all those tuning in, I appreciate it. I will post the link to the show as well if there's anyone out there that did not catch it tonight or wants to listen to it at a later time, you can listen to it at any time with this link. So everything will be on my fitness page. Feel free to head over there after the show to get more information. And have a good night. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.